You could say the Greens have got their marching orders to look at these reports due at the end of the month. You're listening to the American Ag Network. Good afternoon. I'm Susan Littlefield. Sean Hackett joins me today. He's with Hackett Financial Advisors and really got past the WASDE. Not a lot of excitement there, but we know end of month could change that grain excitement just a bit.
Yeah, historically, these two reports at the end of June have always been a very important set of reports. They've tended to create significant volatility in years past, either up or down, depending on which way the surprise. And it makes sense because what we're trying to do with these two reports is really solidify old crop stocks, which is obviously very important. And we want to try to solidify what actually did get planted versus what was surveyed to get planted in March. And so once you set those two metrics of old crop stocks and acres, then it just becomes a weather thing. You know, what kind of yield can we expect? And that's why these two reports have made markets move when they've surprised in the past, and they normally do surprise one way or the other. So even though the USDA monthly WASDE report for June doesn't tend to be that report, these do. And I kind of have a sense, given how hard prices have fallen here in the last 30 days, we might see some short covering going into these reports, given the uncertainty. I just have a sneaky suspicion we might see some short covering as the shorts that have, you know, garnered some profitability in their position take some risk off the table.
So what prep or what mindset should our grain farmers be in as we get ready for these reports out in a few weeks?
Well, I mean, I would say the first thing is we never really know what the USDA is going to say. I mean, we always have an idea what we think they should say, and sometimes they say something different. So all I would say is you know where your risk lies. If you're a producer that hasn't sold a whole lot and your big risk is a bearish surprise in this report, then I would be taking action to mitigate that risk. If you're an end user and you have not purchased a lot of your physical needs, then you need to manage your risk in case it's a bullish surprise. I mean, I would just make sure going into this type of an uncertain, highly volatile, amplified set of reports that I've got what could hurt me managed enough that if it does go against the way I am structured, you know, I can get through it and not be hurt too materially. And I think that's the best advice we give our customers and I give anyone listening to the show.
So the Super El Nino, that has become a hot topic among social media right now.
It is a hot topic. And even though oftentimes the media tends to accentuate sometimes weather, I actually happen to believe in this case that the media is getting the thesis fairly correct. All the data that we see in terms of how rapidly this El Nino is developing, how much warm water sits just below the surface in the Central Pacific, everything is suggesting that this is a rare scenario. You have to remember, since 1850, we've only had 6 or 7 super El Ninos that have ever occurred. So these are not something that come along all the time and occur, but when they do, you know, you have to pay attention to it. You have to understand what to look for, and it can have some weather volatility exposure, especially to markets outside the U.S. For the U.S., fortunately for farmers here, it tends to be good weather, good yields, and bigger crops. And so that would be the storyline is we could be looking at good crops here in the U.S., but we could be looking at some better prices later on in the season if overseas markets tend to get adverse weather, which they've historically done in the past when you've had a super El Nino.
You know, and here in the States, I mean, as you mentioned, it'll be good for us. We've had some very timely rains, which have really helped these crops, especially for the non-irrigated fields across the Midwest.
Absolutely. Most of the dry areas, whether it was the West, whether it was the Southeast, we've gotten some good, timely moisture in most of these regions that have really, I wouldn't say eradicated the overall drought, but have certainly softened it enough that has taken the pinch off. And then one of the other really important features with El Nino is it tends to avoid extreme high daytime temperatures, meaning you tend to avoid getting those 100-degree days, those 105-degree days, which oftentimes you can get when you're in more of a neutral or La Nina type of scenario. If you can avoid high heat with the way we grow crops today and the genetics that we have today, you don't need above normal rainfall. You just need timely rainfall, and you can still produce a very good crop. And I think that's the takeaway for me is we are expecting that the high daytime temps are just not going to show up this year where it counts, and that's going to allow for crops to look pretty good. In fact, if you go back to 1950, every Super El Nino that we've ever had has at least produced trend line yields 50% of the time, and 50% of the time we've had above trend line yields. Of course, it can always be an exception to the rule, but the data says we should be expecting good crops here.
What do you see looking at the livestock side, this roller coaster ride we're on with the cattle market? And today is a day where they just can't get a hold of the green and they keep falling into the red deeper.
Yeah, I think that the market has misinterpreted finding screw worm here domestically in some animals. I think the initial reaction, as you know, was the day after to go significantly higher. I actually think what might happen here, and I don't know for sure, but if you think about African swine fever for hogs or avian flu for dairy, and for poultry, the solution has been liquidate animals in the infected regions to contain spread. If that is one of the solutions that we apply here to infected cattle is liquidate or forced liquidation of areas where infection has been found, that could have the effect of adding supply to the market in the near term while hurting the supply equation in the long term, meaning it could have a negative short-term effect, let's say the next 3 months to 6 months, but could have a very positive long-term effect when eventually that the containment takes place and we stop worrying so much about screwworm proliferation here in the U.S. I don't know if that's the solution that is going to be taken by the USDA. We'll have to wait and see. They are going to be releasing some sterile flies and all that sort of thing. But I think the market might be sensing that could be what happens here. And if it does, it's a negative near-term agitator to supply. And maybe that's what the market's picking up on here. That's just my speculation.
All right. Sean Hackett joining us this afternoon. A quick reminder to everybody, commodity futures and options do involve a substantial risk of loss, not suitable to all investors. And that's the market wrap-up. You're listening to the American Ag Network.